The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 31, text number 23, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 16th, 2009, in Canberra, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 31, text number 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Maitreya uvacha yati prachetaso rajan anyascha bhagavat kata shavayetva brahma lokan yayo svayambhuvo muni. Maitreya uvacha yati prachetaso rajan anyascha bhagavat kata shavayetva brahma lokam yayau svayambhuvo muni.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Maitreya continue. My dear king, Vidura, Sri Narad Muni, the son of Lord Brahma, thus described all these relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the Prachetas. Afterward, he returned to Brahma Loka. One has to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a pure devotee. The Prachetas got this opportunity from the great sage Narada, who told them of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees.
Vandeha. Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sajaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
So, one has to hear about Krishna from pure devotee. Why is that? Because Krishna is not present in the descriptions of the mental speculator. It may appear that Krishna is present when the Mayavadis describe Krishna. But actually it is a shadow of Krishna. It is not the real Krishna. Krishna is fully present in the descriptions about his name, fame, form, pastimes, entourage, dham, paraphernalia, etc. by his pure devotees. He becomes fully present in that transcendental vibration. So when we hear from such personalities who are completely pure, you see, then we can actually develop a real taste for Krishna Katha. Shushu Shoshada Danasya Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vripa Punya Seva Nakirtanam. By serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. So, what does this mean? This means you have to serve them also. Not that I just hear and I don't render service. That's why Krishna says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So why is that service required? Can't you just hear from the pure devotees and become enlightened? Prabhupada says, we do not take the knowledge gratis, free. We have to pay. It's not that we pay money. But we have to give loving service. Why is that? Because this is not intellectual knowledge. It is not jnana. It is vigyan. It is realized knowledge. So the knowledge is only realized to the extent that we serve the servants of Krishna. You see? As Krishna explains in the Adi Purana, Ye me bhaktas jana parata, na me bhaktas chate janaha, mad bhaktanam cha ye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. The one who is my devotee is not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my actual devotee. In other words, unless you become a devotee of Krishna, you cannot realize this knowledge. It is not possible. And the only way to become the devotee of Krishna is become the devotee of the devotee of Krishna. Without becoming the devotee of the devotee, we can never understand this knowledge, you see. It will always remain bewildering to us, a puzzle. We get so many questions from our e-students in my e-course. They're bewildered about this thing and that thing. So many bewilderments are there. Because they're trying to understand it simply by intellectual knowledge without surrendering to the bona fide spiritual master. And we go on giving them so many logical explanations. But unless they develop that mood of a submissive service, they will never understand. They'll continue to be bewildered by the Vedic wisdom. That's where we're seeing. I've been instructing one boy for 8 years. I've been instructing him. He told me 8 years. It hasn't been quite that long. But my course has been going on now for 6 years, so I haven't been instructing him. He mentioned 8 years. He exaggerated the number. But for many, many years, I've been instructing him, and still he can't understand how it's possible a living entity can become a little ant. You see? He just can't fathom it. He's trying to see everything in terms of material science. He's taking the scientists as his authorities. He's trying to understand the Vedic wisdom through the eyes of the material scientists, and therefore he can never understand. We have to lay aside this faith we have in the material scientists, you see. As one songwriter said, I saw the great blunder my teachers had made, scientific delirium madness. Actually, it's crazy, this material science, you see. They base everything on empirical knowledge, but our senses are imperfect. I may hear a sound, I may think it's a car backfiring. Actually, somebody shot a gun, but I thought it was a car backfiring, you see. I No, there's a kitchen in there, but I can't see that kitchen. I can just see the wall. You see? So our senses are limited. A dog can hear certain sound vibrations we cannot hear. They have special dog whistles which are imperceptible to the human ear, but a dog can hear them. That way, at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can blow the whistle and call your dog home without waking your neighbors. The dogs will hear it, you see, but the neighbors won't. So the point is, our senses are limited. There are x-rays that we cannot see with our eyes, but there are instruments that can pick up the x-rays, you see. And there are also things which are far, far, far beyond the purview of any of our scientific instruments to perceive. You see? When the Vaikuntha airplane came to pick up Dhruva Maharaj, it was not perceivable by mundane eyes. You see? So, if we base our knowledge on these limited senses, you see, these imperfect senses, then it is sure and certain that we're going to be illusioned. And if we're illusioned, we're definitely going to make mistakes. Just like Duryodhana, he made that mistake in the pond of his palace of stepping into the pool of water, you see. And in spite of making all these mistakes, still I'm advertising, I am big, big Nobel laureate, PhD. You see, worship me, honor me, you see. This is called cheating. So we have a whole method of so-called knowledge, which is based on these defects, imperfect senses, tendency to be illusion, making mistakes, and cheating. If we put our faith in this illusory, you know, devious system of acquiring knowledge, then how can we understand the Vedic wisdom? It's not possible. We cannot understand. Never be able to understand. You actually want to know things as they are, then find out from the person who's actually created the thing. That's the easy way to understand. Just like one time, there was a Bengali playwright. He wrote a drama, and he called it Shah Jahan. You may know Shah Jahan. He is the one who made that Taj Mahal, you see. Anyway, he had a son, his name was Aurangzeb, and this Aurangzeb, he was a horrible tyrant. He's the one who smashed the temples in Vrindavan. Horrible demon. He not only harassed the Hindus, he also murdered his own brothers and put his own father in prison to take the rulership. You see, he's such a tyrant, this Aurangzeb. So this drama written by the Bengali playwright, it was totally about the atrocities of Aurangzeb. The whole play was just about the atrocities of Aurangzeb. So somebody was wondering, why did you name it after his father, Shah Jahan? Because he was just in the prison, sitting there in the Agra prison during the whole time when all these atrocities were going on. The play is all about Aurangzeb. Why did you name it Shah Jahan? So he asked the playwright, said, well, because he's the real hero, because he was the one who was taking all this suffering in his heart to know of all the atrocities that his son was committing. You see, he was the one, this was beating in his heart. He was taking all this pain in his heart of all the atrocities that his son was committing, and he couldn't do anything about it. He was in prison, you see. So he is the real hero of this play. Therefore, I have named it Shah Jahan. So the point is, how would you know, how could anybody guess why the play was named Shah Jahan? You have to ask the author of the play, you see. So in the same way, how do you know why the universe is going on the way it's going on? How do you know why the existence is going on the way it's going on? Why don't you ask the author? Why don't you ask the person who created it, you see? We can come along and speculate, well, I think it was called Shah Jahan because of this reason, that reason, so many reasons, so many speculations, you see. So we come along and speculate, well, I think existence came by, you know, Darwinian evolution or, you know, this thing or that thing. We can speculate, but that's simply speculation. And they call it science. It's such a bogus thing. It's just speculation. And they claim it to be knowledge. Actually, I had personal experience. I went to a big scientific presentation at the University of Florida back in about 73. I was a young brahmachari then in my saffron robes. So I went to the, I looked different than everybody else. There was about 3,000 students and teachers there to hear the big PhD scientists come and tell us about black holes in outer space, you see. So that finally, after making his presentation, he turned off all the lights. They'd had slide presentation. You know, it was a 3D thing. So everybody was just in awe. Black holes in outer space. Everybody was in a great awe. You see, they were just oohing and eyeing over his amazing scientific presentation, you see. So then I raised my hand. And I said, what you're presenting, these black holes in outer space, is this a theory or is it a fact? And he said, I think it's a fact. Note the word I think. Okay. So then a few other people asked some questions. Again, I got my hand up. I got recognized. And I told the learned scientist, I said, throughout the history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some period of time, you see. And then it is replaced by another theory. So how do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? Notice I said, he just said it was a fact, and now I'm saying it's a theory. This is called a loaded question. If by answering, buying into my question, he's actually admitting that his first answer was wrong. And he did. He took it. He fell for it. I said, how do we know that your theory will not be defeated by another theory? He said, I hope it is, because then we will be making progress. So just see the rascal. He's saying it is fact, and now he's saying when it's shown to be false, that will be the progress of science. Well, actually, science progressed that night because I showed the fallacy of his theory. Science did progress that night because I showed that it actually was not a fact. It was only a theory which will in due course be proven wrong. So my statement actually that night in that assembly advanced the cause of true science, you see. True science means to know things as they are. That is actual science. You see, Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam. To know things as they actually are, that is real science. Not this bogus so-called speculative science, you see. So, because we have heard from the pure devotee, his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, therefore we can speak very strongly against all this madness that is going on all around us, you see. The whole world has gone crazy, basing everything on this empirical science. The whole world is crazy. Even the religionists now, they've lost all their potency. They're embracing modern science more and more, you see. They're giving in, and everyone's following the way of the scientists more and more and more and more and more, you see. But we followers of the Vedic knowledge, you see, Vaishnava culture, Krishna culture, we know better. We know these scientists are rascals. They don't know what they're talking about. They're simply speculating. And we know there are far greater scientists who have perfect knowledge of the universe. Brahmaji is perfect Vedic scientist. He must know. He created it. He created this material universe. He's perfectly knowing everything about it. How everything is going on. All the different things they're trying to figure out. It's all within Brahmaji's creation. Brahmaji has perfect scientific knowledge of everything. So why, instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, why don't we just hear from that person, the engineer of the universe who put everything into motion here under Krishna's direction, and find out from him what's going on here. Lord Chaitanya very mercifully discovered for us the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvaraha Paramaha Krishnaha Satchirananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna is the supreme controller. Ishvara Padama Krishna, you see. It's simple Sanskrit. This is the most elementary simple Sanskrit. Ishvara, controller, Parama Supreme, Krishna. You don't, you have, in Sanskrit, is implied. You don't have to say is, you see. Ishvara Padama Krishna means Krishna is the Supreme Controller. And then Satchidananda Vigraha. He has an eternal form full of bliss and knowledge. And Adir Adir Govinda. He has no origin. He's the origin of everything. He's also known as Govinda. And Sarva Karana Karanam. And he is the cause of all causes. You see. So that is scientific knowledge. You see. That is the basis of everything. Once you understand the basis of everything, the foundation of everything, then you can understand everything. You see? When you know Krishna, then you can know everything. Ganena tu tada jnanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham madityam vajjnanam prakashayati tatpuram. When one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So when you know Krishna, then you know everything. Because he's the basis of everything. Everything is the energy of Krishna. So when you know Krishna, then you have perfect knowledge of everything. Nothing exists save and except for the fact that Krishna is emanating it from himself. No person, no object, nothing. Even outer space cannot exist unless Krishna is emanating that space from himself. Ether. It is an element, actually. The etherical element. Bumirapo nalo vayur kang manobudare vacha ahankara iti yangme banaprakita rashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, altogether these eight constitute my separated material energies. Everything is existing by Krishna's emanating it from himself. Everything. You exist because Krishna is emanating you from himself. If it wasn't for that, you wouldn't even exist. You exist because Krishna is emanating you from himself for the purpose of having a loving relationship with you. That's why you exist. Not because your mother and father wanted to have a baby. Forget that nonsense. You see. You're not your body. You're an eternal spiritual being in quality one with God who is being eternally emanated from him to have a loving relationship with him. So this is actual scientific knowledge. When you understand Krishna, then everything falls into place. Everything. So we have a few minutes left here. I can ask now if there's some questions. Yes.
I come to understand that Krishna is the supreme man, and all the other jivas are
supreme male.
Male.
Okay.
And all the other jivas are female.
That's right.
So does that mean that all the jivas have a gender, which is a female gender?
Does it mean that?
Do they have a gender, and their gender is female?
No, the bodies, they're in the spiritual world, in the original spiritual forms of the liberated souls, there are both male and female forms. But the mentality, the psychology, the psychological makeup of every liberated soul is feminine. In that he or she, whatever the case may be, wants to be enjoyed by Krishna. Masculine means enjoyer, and feminine means enjoyed. Prakriti and Purusha. See, Prakriti means enjoyed, Purusha means enjoyer. So in Sanskrit, Hindi, even in modern day Hindi, I was on the way to Vrindavan, we stopped at a gas station to use the bathroom on our way to Vrindavan. Instead of saying male and female on the bathrooms, it said Prakriti and Purusha. So those terms are common terms for male and female, even today in India, you see. Prakriti, Purusha. So Krishna is Purusha, enjoyer, and we are all Prakriti. We are his energy. Energetic means enjoyer, and energy means enjoyed. Krishna is emanating us from himself for the purpose of enjoying us. That's why we exist. Jagannath Balladev Subhadra Gonditai Ki Jai, Radhamadar Ki Jai. So we exist simply to give pleasure to Krishna. So in that sense, we are feminine. Although, for the sake of varieties of enjoyment, you have spiritual beings who are male and female embodied in the spiritual world. Their spiritual bodies are male and female. Gopas and gopis, you see. Cowherd boys and cowherd girls. You see. Cows and bulls, you see. But everyone's mood is feminine, to be enjoyed by Krishna, everyone. In the material world, we are trying to be Purusha. We're all trying to be the enjoyer. Male and female both. We're all trying to be the enjoyers of this world. So, but actually our real nature and our liberated state is feminine. And the topmost of all devotees in the spiritual world, they are the gopis. They are the most celebrated, as the highest. We even pray every morning. Sometimes people criticize the Hare Krishna movement for being male chauvinistic. But how you can say that when every morning we have so many men praying that they can become women in the next life? Do you know that? In the Tulsi prayers, we're praying to become women in our next birth. Yeah, we're praying to become gopis in Vrindavan. So how you can say we're male chauvinists? We're praying to become gopi girls in our next lifetime. Doesn't make sense, you know. We're praying every morning. All these strong young brahmacharis are praying to become gopis. Praying to become young girls, you see, in the next birth, in the pastimes of Krishna. That's how we pray in the Tulsi prayers. If you read the translation for the Tulsi prayers, we're praying to become girls in our next life. Gopi girls. So actually that is the mood. We are all actually feminine in our liberated condition. Whether it's the body of a goat, cowherd boy or cowherd girl, they all are in the feminine mood of wanting to be enjoyed by Krishna. Any other questions? So everyone has all the answers now. This is it. In 5 minutes it's going to be over. Getting ready to go to the airport. So that was your last chance.
Maharaj, I just have one question. If let's say one is desiring to increase their bhakti or their devotion, what are the methods do you prescribe?
Take a spiritual master. Because it's only by the grace of the spiritual master that one can take advancement. Take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. As Prabhupada is saying here, actually he gives it in. He says, one cannot become a perfect devotee of the Lord without having touched the lotus feet of a great devotee. He says the process of self-realization, the pathway back to home, back to God, it means surrendering to the bona fide spiritual master and taking the dust of his lotus feet on one's head. Thus one advances on the path of transcendental realization. So if you want to get on the fast track, you're tired of just dragging along, at a snail's pace in your Krishna consciousness. You want to get on that fast track. And you have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That's what Prabhupada is saying. You see. That's required. Taking the dust of his lotus feet on your head, you take the shelter of the bona fide guru. And then you advance. Then you really start advancing. By that shelter of the spiritual master. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.